Beauty Unplugged, the podcast. Welcome to my podcast, She Unplugged, and I have today the amazing Maxine as a guest. We've known each other for quite a few years. We met at the WIN conference in one of the sessions there where we shared some of our stories. And that's exactly what we want to do today. We want to share Maxine's story.
Thank you so much, Anya. It's such a delight to be here. I have such respect for you. You literally blew me away with your story. I remember being moved to tears, actually. So it's been such an honor to stay connected with you and to be here now. So thank you for having me.
I would like to read part of your preparation for today because it really moved me. You wrote, I think this is so important given the year we had. So it's about talking about achieving the impossible and pushing through hard times. Pretty much everyone around the globe has had to deal with circumstances that they would rather not have. And many of us are still in this situation. This can lead people to be fearful and keep them in reaction mode, where their lives become an unproductive series of reactions to very challenging external issues. And this is basically where I really want to kick in. Mm-hmm. We all know through what we are currently living. Mm-hmm. And I find it vitally important that we get out of the reaction mode into an action mode. Yeah. So let's just start there. How do you do that?
Yeah, well, I think it's probably helpful. We keep hearing all the time, like, these are unprecedented times where, you know, everything that could have possibly gone wrong has gone wrong. Like, literally, millions of people are sick. COVID-19 has literally changed everything as we know it, right? And, you know, even before we hit record, we were saying that is just one of so many problems in the world right now. It's just amplified everything. This is unprecedented. It is terrifying. It caused people to just be reacting, as we're saying, leading into mental health issues, you know, physical issues potentially, because of course this affects the body being in a state of stress constantly, right? However, for me though, all this chaos, all this fearfulness, all this needing to react almost hopelessly to literally very challenging circumstances, this is nothing that is new to me. Sadly, through my own choices, I found myself in exactly this position. A little over 20 years ago now, when I was living in Soho, I was actually homeless at the time. I was an addict at the time. I had dropped out of school. I had basically ruined my life and let down every single person who cared about me. My parents are amazing people. They have done their best to raise me, my siblings up, to the best of their ability. But you know, sometimes when you're a teenager, you know better than your parents. So I decided to create my own freedom and literally ran away from home. It was then one stupid decision after another. First of all, the wrong guy, getting involved with drugs. And I just kept on digging myself this ridiculous pit of a mess. So I found myself one day, literally down to my last few pounds. Now that's the money we use in the UK. Down to my last few pounds. I'd lost my job at Starbucks. I had no idea how to get another job. I don't think I could have got another job. And I had a friend who was sort of living this chaotic lifestyle at the same time. And she basically said, you know, we need money. And I heard of this guy that could give us a job. Let's go. We don't have to do too much. Do you want to come along? And it sounded like an amazing idea. So I went along, and the realization really of what I was getting myself into didn't hit me until I walked into this apartment that we were supposedly going for this interview, and the smell of this place hit me. And I literally, Anya, froze to the spot and began to panic, thinking, how in the world did I end up here? Like, how did I end up here? My parents took me to church growing up. Like, what in the world am I doing here coming to see this guy about a job? Now, this guy just happened to be running, you know, a business looking for prostitutes to hire. And I thought, what in the world am I doing here? So I began to panic and just literally began to shake. And I think I must have shaken myself into a trance, because the next thing I remember, I must have zoned out. I remember being snapped out of this trance-like state by this man looking at me furiously, saying, "You know how much you're supposed to charge, right?" And I thought, "I have no clue what you're supposed to charge. I just can't do this." And I just began to panic, thinking, "I just can't do this." And it was like he kind of got into the dialogue in my head, because the next thing he says is like, "What choice do people like you have anyway?" And if he'd slapped me in the face, I'm telling you, it would have hurt less, because that was the painful truth. I was a mess. I was a complete mess. I had no idea at this point what to do, where to look, what to think. I literally just stood there, mouth open, no sound coming out, just shaking, 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 shaking. And literally some of the things that people are feeling today, where you're like, "Oh my God, like, this is just such a hopeless situation. This is unprecedented. What in the world do I do? How can this be my only choice in life?" And it was literally all these panic thoughts going around in my mind. I had no idea what to do. I just said to myself, like, "How in the world do I get out of this?" And it was in the moment I asked that question, like, just like I'm hearing your voice, Anya, I heard a voice within me say, "This is not who you're meant to be. You're meant for so much more." I had no idea who or what that voice was, but I wanted so badly for that voice to be true, I chose to believe it. And that gave me the strength I needed to literally turn and run out of that room into the freezing cold street. And I tell you what, cold air, I've never felt so amazing. And I had no money still. I had no plans. I had nothing. Just that word, that this is not who you're meant to be. You're meant for so much more. And I was. It was true. So I began to follow that voice. I had no idea who it was. I've come to know that voice as the voice of God. And it led me back into the school system. I ended up graduating at the top of my class at the University of Wales, went on to the University of Cambridge for my MBA, where I was a class vice president traveling around the world representing Cambridge. That catapulted my career. I went on to go into the tech financing field. I was basically highlighted as one of the top 30 under the age of 40 in the field. I had an incredible international career, met and married the love of my life. We have two incredible kids. My daughter, Chiamaka, her name literally means God is good, God is beautiful, because I found that to be true. And my son, Nandi Jr., he's just amazing. And I say all of that to say that no matter what it looks like, no matter what it feels like, if you feel like it's over, this is not who you're meant to be. You're meant for so much more. I am no more special than anybody else.
It is amazing to listen to your story and to hear where it took you. Now let's go back to that you out on the cold street. Because there's a process between being out there and realizing, yes, I'm meant for more, and then graduating top of your class, or even getting back into the school, or how to get back in touch with the parents, how to go through that process. I mean, what steps did you take from that moment out there of knowing, okay, I'm meant for more than that, to actually getting the result?
Yeah, and actually, I want to almost take you back into that room, because I think that moment, the critical moment, the first critical step was there. Okay. So in that moment, when the guy said to me, "You'll never amount to anything, you know, people like you have no choice but to do this," he was right. Everything in the physical supported that statement. It was factual truth. But that was right. But when I heard, "This is not who you're meant to be, you're meant for so much more," I could have looked at everything around and said, "This is nuts," because it was nuts to the rational mind. But I chose to believe that, and I made a decision. And to decide, you know, anything with a side, any word with a side, literally means to kill something. So homicide means to kill another human being. Suicide means to take one's own life. Decide means to kill any other option, but I'm meant for more. So the first step, I would say, for anybody who's trying to create any sort of transformation, whether it's due to the pandemic or anything else, you have got to kill off any other option than anything less than meant for more. Does that make sense? So in that moment, regardless of what it looks like, regardless of even if all the facts support that you're going down and this is over and you can never be anything, you need to make a decision. Because the truth is, people always say all the time, "Oh, seeing is believing, seeing is believing, seeing is believing." I would say actually that's kind of overrated. Seeing is not believing, believing is seeing. So you've got to cut through all the noise of what we see in the physical realm and almost tap into what else is there, because there's plenty, and say, I'm going to choose to believe that there's another option. And this is not even just some mystical thing. This is science, right? We are all made, you know, everything in life, me, yeah. you, atoms, computers, we're made of atoms. And atoms, the building block of all life, is mostly invisible. Like 99.99999% of it is what you can't see. Literally, what you can see of it is the size of a peanut compared to the baseball field or big sports field of what is. So your circumstances might be crushing you. You might feel like, there's no way out. No. What you're seeing is the peanuts. There's a whole possibility, a realm of possibilities that you cannot see. So I would say the first step to transformation is to decide, regardless of what it looks like, I'm meant for more. And then...
Okay, but how do I get there? Because that is one of the most difficult things. Despite of the circumstances, despite of what life has taught you so far, despite of what people have told you, you know, all the condition, despite of all of that, to take that decision, how do you do it? Because you have to go against everything so far in your life and everybody kind of also to say, no, there is more. Without having done any therapy, any coaching, any nothing.
And that's actually a very good point. So I'm not sort of saying that you can kind of go off and, you know, basically reinvent wheels and do things, because I'm a coach myself. I really believe in supporting people, you know, in their progress. I really believe where therapy is needed, go get it. So I'm not saying kind of forfeit all of that. But what I am saying is, if your situations have you in reaction mode, which is where we started, there might be time to kind of close your eyes to some of those situations. And the way that you are able to close your eyes to some of those situations is different for everybody else, for everybody, right? So for me right now, it's not really watching news endlessly like I see some people doing, right? I'm somebody who I need to be aware of what's going on, but I don't need to spend the whole day watching it, right? I watch 5 minutes of it and I can feel my mood already being kind of drained. So you know what it is for you, right? You know, limit to an extent some of the things that you're reacting to. But even more than that, I would say create a powerful vision that is so much bigger than what it is that's oppressing you. Does that make sense? So for me, in that moment, because it was such an intense moment, you're meant for more. I just wanted anything but this situation. Mm-hmm. And that was enough of a vision for me to kind of run out and say, okay, what's this other more that I could be meant for? But right now, what is kind of helping me push through the incredible difficulties that I'm working through, that my clients are working through, helping them do the same, is vision. There is nothing like a powerful vision that you are excited about, that is, you feel is linked to your purpose, that you feel that you would actually live your life for this. There's nothing like that to make you think, you know what, I don't see how this is going to work, but this is so connected to my soul. I want this more than anything. And that will help you reach into that realm of possibilities and say, you know what, I'm ready to believe that there's something else.
The first part is like that closing off from the outside world a little bit. So you say limiting, for example, the extent you're listening to the news. Would you also agree? I mean, some of our friends are probably not that good for us because they might keep telling us the same story. So limit that input. What is all part of that limiting that sort of like bad intake? News, friends, what else?
Yeah, so basically that's such a good point. And I think it's really important to have the vision first, because you've got to know where you're going first to know, you know, who or what around you is supporting it. So if you know that you, let's say, for example, like you want to go get a promotion, that's the thing. And, you know, right now the company is kind of cutting back. How am I going to get a promotion? If there's someone that you're around, like a friend, that's like always making you feel bad, always feeling like you don't know, you know, that is not good for you. And with your promotion or your goal or whatever it is in mind, you just got to look at everything around you. This could be friends. This could be habits. You know, like I literally had somebody who's like, you know what? I really want to get to bed early so I can kind of be up and, you know, put in the extra, but you don't know where 9 to 12 in the evening goes, because maybe you're watching Netflix, maybe you're doing something else that's mindless. It's not supporting the vision that you say you have. So it's looking at your time. It's looking at your money. It's looking at your friends. It's looking at your environment. Mm-hmm. Does it support the vision of who you say you want to be? And it's a holistic thing I literally take my clients through, where we look at everything, everything. Mm-hmm. Does this support who you say you want to be, or does it take away from it? And I like to call it hiring and firing, you know. So literally, you got to hire, you know, the people and the things that are going to support your vision, and fire, not in a mean way, but it might just be limit your exposure. Like, if there's somebody who is kind of totally making you feel bad about yourself, or just wants to drain your energy, or take, and never give, then do you really have the energy for that to become who you want to be? You don't. So it's kind of looking at everything: time, money, people, things. Places. Does it support who you want to become? And then being bold enough to have, you know, the conversations that need to happen, if that's the case, to make the change.
So we're starting basically with the vision.
Absolutely.
The vision is my compass, is my north,
yes,
in terms of deciding what I need to change,
yes,
and what I can keep. So that hiring and firing.
Yeah.
And yeah. I think what I would like to underline, it doesn't mean that the people who drain you of energy are doing that on purpose, consciously.
No.
They usually have the best,
yeah,
you know, for you at their heart, but the way they do it maybe doesn't really help you to achieve, yeah, your vision.
Right. And you know, I have to say, no, very few people actually set out to be horrible. Yeah. Very few people actually set out to make your life live in hell. But the issue that kind of affects people is when you're in reaction mode. So, oh, this person just gets on my nerves, or you know what, and you're just kind of reacting to this person who drains your energy, or you're reacting to the fact that you don't know where your evening goes, or you're reacting to the fact that, you know, your kids are out of control. And trust me, I'm saying all these things, not kind of pointing at anybody. I've lived all this, right? You're just reacting. It's getting nowhere. But when you know, okay, this is who I want to be, who is that woman? Who is that man already? And do they have all of this going on? And just being very, you know, that future self, and just saying, okay, the future me wouldn't have all of this going on. How can I deal with this? And how can I do all this in love? Because like I say, somebody who is annoying you probably did not set out to annoy you. And if they really did, you really shouldn't have anything to do with them. But if it's just a thing that, hey, I was in reaction mode, I was available for this, but the future me is no longer available for this, then you deal with that in love. And it might just be limiting exposure, or just saying, okay, we see each other Tuesday at 6 o'clock, and that's it, rather than just being around this person nonstop.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, to their energy draining comments.
I'm meeting and I'm seeing and I'm talking to a lot of women who have, well, also men, who have lost or have never had a clear vision of themselves. They, I have the impression, have been in reactive mode,
yeah,
kind of like all their life.
Yeah.
It was one step after the other, and it was just the way it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So to the listener and the viewer out there, how do I reconnect or rediscover or discover in the first place that vision of myself that lets my heart jump, that lets my eyes lit up? How do I do that actually?
Yeah, no, it's such a good question. I think a great way, first of all, again, kind of just limits, because a lot of people have done what you say, which is literally been told, this is your vision, go do this, and they never know. So it's kind of limit everybody's voices. So get alone, get quiet. For me, I still do this, though I'm clear on what my vision is. Alone time, quiet time, where it's just you, and you listen. You listen to your soul. You ask, I believe in God. So I ask God, like, who am I? What's going to set my soul on fire? Connect to source, connect to something bigger than you. And have the alone time, the quiet time to do that would be my number one recommendation. And I think, to be honest, you don't have to be a religious person to do this. I literally walked into, you know, this situation I explained to you. That's the kind of life I was living. And I was still able to get divine guidance. So I feel that this is not like a religious thing, right? Sit down alone, get divine guidance. Ask questions about who you're meant to be is probably my biggest advice. And secondly, I would say, if you can, you know, before people were telling you what to do, before it was kind of just reacting to other people's expectations, what did you love to do? You know, as a child, what were you doing that you kind of, you know, your mother was looking for you because she couldn't find you? You were just in the flow. You were just lost in the moment. So for me, you know, before I kind of went off the rails, I spent most of my childhood in a book. I loved reading. I'd spent hours and hours reading, escaping into different stories and, you know, just enjoying and learning in that way, reading, learning. Mm-hmm. And that's just who I am. I love doing that even now. So when I had kind of drifted away, you know, I'd loved reading, I'd loved learning, I'd loved growing intellectually. I drifted away from that, and that's where I kind of got lost. Mm-hmm. think a lot of people are kind of lost because they kind of disconnected from that child who knew what she wanted. She knew what she liked until people told her who to be. And sadly, you know, all of us, they mean well, the people who tell us who to be mean well, but at that age, typically you're not able to stand up for, no, this is me. But now as an adult, if you're wondering, what's my vision? Who am I? Try and reconnect back to that little girl or that little guy and just say, what did he love? What did she love? And what did she get lost in for hours? Because that usually has a connection to the vision that's going to set your soul on fire.
That is beautiful. Now, I do know, and you did say you have two children.
Yeah.
As a mom, that's now the logical next question. As a mom, as a parent, how can we preserve that vision that the kids have of themselves?
That is such a good question. I pray a lot because I'm a mom. I have all these experiences. I've made a lot of mistakes. I am by no means perfect. So one of my prayers every single day is, God, please let me allow these children to be who they're meant to be. Mm-hmm. I personally, my daughter is just incredible. She's going to be the boss of something, that is for sure. Because, you know, one day I was working, she came in and said, Mommy, what's a CEO? And I explained to her what a CEO is. She's like, all right, I'm your CEO then. Like, she's just such a natural leader, what some might even call bossy. And I love it. But sometimes when she's bossing me around, when I'm giving instructions, I'm tempted to say, just stop it. And I have to kind of, I do say that sometimes, and I quickly, you know, come with my tail between my legs and I apologize. So I think the first thing I would say to people to preserve who your child is meant to be, no, you're not going to be perfect. Like, none of us are, right? And when you fall short, not if, when, apologize. So I would say that. I pray, I kind of, you know, try to be aware of what I'm doing. And when I miss the mark, I apologize. And I see the things that they love to do. Not so much my son, he's only one yet, but what my daughter loves to do, I encourage it. So she is an artist. She's a CEO artist. And this kid, I literally have a whole Instagram account of her art. My sister gave me this idea. All these pictures that she draws in the house has got papers everywhere. She's like, why don't you create an Instagram account so she can have these pictures when she's older? And I encourage it. You know, like if she's ever bored, I'm like, well, why don't you go draw a picture? And she's like, yeah. And she's drawing for hours and you just see the creativity flow through her. So I say, just be aware of like, okay, what do your children love to do and encourage it? So for me, like even now I'm driving to school, she was saying, oh, you know, with all the social distancing now, I wanted to go to say hello to my teacher from last year and I couldn't, but she gave me a leaf. I'm like, wow, why don't you draw a picture of the leaf? She's like, oh my gosh, I'm going to do that when I get home. So just knowing that she loves to draw and just encouraging it and celebrating it and, you know, get an Instagram account so she can be proud of her work. Whatever, you know, watch your kids. Because I really believe that, yes, we're their parents, but these are souls. These are, you know, these are beings that are here for us to steward in the best way we can. So just watch them. They'll tell you who they are. And do your best to honor it. No, you'll screw up and apologize quickly.
That is easier to do as long as they're very small and kind of... Well, protected by the family, you know, within the family, you can have certain ways of talking, of encouraging, of letting the creativity flow. Like you talk about your daughter, you know, she can draw and paint for hours. Mm-hmm. Now, it becomes a different issue because my daughter got lost in drawing, but then in school got told, well, you know, well, there were a couple of things, but kind of like, it doesn't have to be perfect and we don't have time.
Yes.
So that's the sort of second step. When they leave the home security and safety, how can we then as parents support them regardless of what the outside world tells them? And it's usually not that nice.
Yeah.
And actually not doing it.
It's so interesting that you've made that comment about, you know, your daughter saying, hey, it doesn't have to be so perfect. Don't take time. I literally have exactly, almost verbatim, the same thing come back to me about my daughter. So we have these phone calls with the teachers every 2-3 weeks about how the child is doing. She said, oh my gosh, she's such a brilliant student. But, you know, she tries to make it so perfect. She tries to take time. And, you know, the conversation ended. And I remember thinking for a while, like, that didn't feel good. Mm-hmm. And I remember thinking, okay, my plan to address this in answer to the question is, when I go to speak to a teacher next, whether that's in the PTA setting or the Parent Teachers Association or another phone call, would be to say, okay, she's taking too much time for what? Like, what is your measure of success? I'm going to go coach on her a little bit and just say, you know, too perfect, taking too much time doing what? Because I'm not going to have my child be made wrong for something that is not wrong. Because a lot of the time, some of the things that people learn in school or people get taught in school are not really preparing people for the real world. You've got fishes being told that they're supposed to be birds, and people, you know, round people being put in square holes, and they go through their lives feeling like a failure. So to an extent, I've lived it to myself. So I'm ready to tackle this head on and just say, okay, by what measure of success is this wrong? And I'm not saying my child can't make a mistake, nobody's perfect, but I'm actually going to address this with the teacher and say, okay, taking too much time for what? Because when I hire people, when I'm coaching people, taking time to do an excellent job in the marketplace is celebrated. Being diligent is celebrated. Not rushing through something and then not doing a job properly is celebrated. So I'm actually planning on really being potentially one of the most annoying parents they've ever met.
How do you coach or educate your daughter that the comment she hears from that teacher in that context, she can disregard or, you know, but then the other comment she needs to keep in mind and act on?
Yeah. So I think you're right. This is not just teachers. This is everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. In terms of, you know, what do I listen to and what do I disregard? Yeah. And I think this is an ongoing thing. I don't believe it's something, oh, I suddenly arrive and I've trained this, you know, because I think with children, by the time you kind of feel like, well, you know what I'm doing at this stage, they develop to another stage that has you thinking, huh, like what in the world just happened? So I think a big part of my helping my daughter be ready for the real world is based on coaching I receive. I have coaches for almost everything. I have a coach on parenting. So I get advice on how I can help her be the most confident individual that she can be. But one of the key things that I find really helps with preparing my daughter for getting out there into the real world is this clear distinction with, you know, this is who I am and this is what I do. So just to kind of break that down a little bit more, like if I, you know, say to my daughter, hey, you're doing this, da, 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 she thinks, oh, no, I'm bad. And that's not what I'm trying to say. I'm saying what you're doing is not great. You know, you can fix it. You have control over that. You can rise above it. So I try to say, to make that clear distinction of like, hey, you are good and you know what you're doing is good, or you are bad and what you're doing is bad. And I try to say to her, you're never bad. You are always good regardless of what you're doing. It's what you're doing that changes from good to bad. And if anybody out there makes you feel that you are bad and they're not commenting on what you're doing, then that's a problem, you know? So even now, like, you know, raising up a child, we have all these issues of Black Lives Matter, systemic racism, so much has come up. I had to deal with so much, even at her age, about being made to feel bad because of the way I looked. I had to get clear and say, hey, nobody should ever say anything that makes you feel bad. You're not bad. You might do things that are bad, in which case you fix them. Even mommy makes mistakes and does things that are bad. You fix them. But if you are ever made to feel bad, that is unacceptable. So that is how we're dealing with it at age 5. We'll see what it looks like when she's a teenager like yours or, you know, whatever.
But at the same time, I mean, I think it applies to all ages. And we can even go now into the working environment. Yeah. When the team leader, when the boss, when the CEO isn't able to make the distinction between the behavior and the identity of somebody, then it becomes a problem.
Yes.
If they come with the phrase, you are, instead of you did, or at least I perceived what you did in that way, then it becomes a problem. And not many people are very good at that.
No.
You know, the feedback is a word that is kind of diluted down to virtually nothing. And people have great difficulties of telling somebody that they did a job in a certain way and that the behavior is nice to be changed.
Yes.
But
yes.
The person, the core, is perfectly okay.
The core is magnificent. And literally, I tell her that every single day. Like, we have an area that we get to on the drive to school. And once we hit that area, that road, the final stretch, she says, what time is it, mommy? It's affirmations time. When we go through affirming who she is. I am confident. I am brave. I am a good listener. I'm a good learner. I am brilliant. I am all of these things. And she has been the one coming up with them. At first, I was coaching her on what she could come up with. And we just affirm who she is, that, you know, whatever may come up, yes, you can fix that. We'll always be fixing that till we die. But who you are is magnificent. And there's so many aspects of who you are that we affirm every single day. And I think, you know, that is something that works for a five-year-old. It should work. It could work for anybody, no matter who you are, what age you are, just affirming who you are and knowing, again, that regardless of what's going on, what you do wrong, that you are magnificent.
That brings us back to finding the vision. If we didn't have a mom that drove us to school at five and had the final stretch telling us affirmations and teaching us what they are, how can we start now being an adult?
Well, yeah, no, that's such a good question. I would say, first of all, regardless of whether you had that mom or not, the right affirmations, when you first start saying them, should, and I don't say should often, they should feel far-fetched. So if you're saying affirmations that are within reach, you're not dreaming big enough. Mm. Literally, you are not dreaming big enough. When you first start, some of the affirmations that I first start saying, or I get my clients, they all feel ridiculous at first. But there's something about repetition and repetition and repetition, because you've heard in your life, oh, you're not good enough, or you're stupid, or you're this. You've heard that so many times to the point it's actually ingrained in who you are. That's part of the problem. So you're almost kind of brainwashing yourself the other way. And repetition, 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 you hearing yourself say it more times than you've heard, oh, you're not good enough, or you're stupid, it's kind of undoing the damage. So it is not out of the ordinary that it sounds ridiculous at first. It should. That's what I'd say, first of all. And secondly, I would say, get help. There's no point trying to do this alone. Like, there are many brilliant therapists, is that what you need, to go get the help to process difficult stuff that you've been through. Mm-hmm. And there are coaches. If you're, no, I'm done with processing now, I want to move forward, even to find my vision, there are coaches that can help you. I help people discover their vision all the time. Go get the help. And I'm not saying necessarily come to me. You find who gels with you. And also surround yourself with what you want. So if you talked about this already, like who you surround yourself with, if every single person around you also feels like, well, I have no vision, then you're going to get more of the same. I would surround myself with people who have vision, who are inspiring. And in this day and age where we could be locked down any minute, you don't have to go anywhere. Like, literally, I have one new person I discovered online. I absolutely love their content. They are a big dreamer. And just listen to one or two of their things, I'm like, yes, I didn't do anything. And you just need to surround yourself with one or two people like that. And immediately it begins to shift you. Suddenly something comes alive and you're like, maybe it's possible for me. But you've almost got to you've been brainwashed the wrong way for so long. Brainwash yourself the right way. And this is kind of the shift from reaction mode. So you're currently potentially in reaction mode of like, well, nothing works and I'm not good enough, I've heard this. Now I'm being action mode, being creation mode, and say, right, who are the go-getters with vision? Let me hang around them by listening to their podcasts. You know, so you might, in fact, you're listening to this is great. Hopefully you'll be inspired. Go listen to some of the others. I loved listening to Kristen, Geraldine, all the other people. Like, they inspire me. So what are you listening to nonstop? Because you become that. So if you get very deliberate and say, I'm not going to just react to what my mind is telling me, I'm not good enough. I'm not just going to react to the doom and gloom that's nonstop on the news. I'm going to go fill my ears with people who have vision, with people who are inspired. I'm going to go, if necessary, get a coach who's going to hold me accountable, and I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. You won't get it, because you get what you focus on. And if you're going to focus on I'm not good enough, you are sadly going to get more of the same. Mm-hmm. But if you focus on people like, yes, women with vision, there's many of them that have been on the show. You are one, Anya. So many people out there who are putting out incredible content. You know, it's a sacrifice for them to go do that. But it's there for you. Mm-hmm. You take charge of your life and surround yourself with that. There's no way you can focus on that and not grow.
Just on the practical side, I have noticed that, and I've learned that thinking an affirmation isn't quite the same as writing it down, as saying it out aloud. And then if you go all the way to the mirror work to actually say it to your own image in the mirror, how do you do it? For yourself.
Yeah, all the above. So basically, sometimes I try to be very mindful, because the thoughts can be sneaky. Mm-hmm. Even me having done all this work for myself, decades, and helped people do this work, thoughts thoughts of, oh, you're not good enough, or who do you think you are to want? It comes every single day. So just being very aware and tackling the thoughts head on. And I can't stop the thoughts coming sometimes, but I speak out loud immediately, because then I stop thinking once I speak a positive affirmation. That's a way to use it. I do the mirror work. I love journaling every single morning. So I think I have all of these tools in my toolkit, and I just use them as and when. But I would say, you know, if anybody's just getting started and they're not sure, I would say, number one, first of all, just be aware of the thoughts running through your mind and break them with saying something that you actually want to create, rather than, you know, thinking about something you want to avoid, if that makes sense.
Now that makes perfect sense. And sometimes I even recommend to people, say, well, to actually become aware of your own self-talk, have a piece of paper on your desk and just write it down. And at the end of the day, have a look at how nicely you talk to you. Because what I found very often that then coaches say, God, the language I'm using, I would never speak to anybody like
anybody
that.
Anybody else.
But, you know, I've been, well, now you know. Now you can change it. And I think that first step of being aware of that nasty self-talk, and maybe we kind of like wipe it off the table. Oh, it wasn't meant like that. Or I didn't mean it serious. Hang on. You said it.
Yeah.
Even if you only meant it for 5%, it hurts yourself, you know, inside some point of you. Stop it.
Yeah. And actually, just it made me remember that what you just said made me remember this. I was listening on YouTube, one of these inspirational talks. I'm always listening to something. And this lady talked about like cooking two bowls of white rice. Mm-hmm. And she had one bowl of white rice that she put by the window, and she thought like loving thoughts towards this bowl of white rice by the window. And then another bowl of white rice, she put like, I think by the shoe rack, like just hidden, and she thought nasty thoughts to it. And she kind of forgot about this. She got her kids involved, everybody involved. And I think it was like 2 weeks later, and they said, oh, let's go check on the rice. And as you can guess, the rice that had been, you know, left by the window and thought lovely towards, I mean, of course, the rice after 2 weeks looks bad, but it looked okay. But the one that had the nasty thoughts and was just left was like green and gungy and just totally destroyed. I mean, this is rice, and this is potentially what we are doing to ourselves when we don't realize the power of our thoughts. They literally create and destroy life.
When you just talked about the rice, maybe you remember the name, the Japanese scientist who takes photos of the water crystal.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, if you haven't, I mean, you just Google it, Japanese scientist, water crystals, microscope.
Mind-blowing.
He published books. I've got two upstairs in the library. I remember, actually, there was a time when I would, and that's maybe one thing people could do. You write down a nice affirmation on a lovely piece of paper, like, I'm worthy.
Yeah.
And you put it under your glass of water.
Oh, yes.
And the glass of water, you just refill. And whatever you believe or not believe, even if it's only the fact that the moment you take a glass of water and obviously it's sitting on the piece of paper and you read it, it's a constant reminder.
Yes.
I'm worthy.
Yes. And it's not an overnight miracle thing necessarily, but the more you start to see that, the more you see it, you're gradually kind of brainwashing yourself the right way. There will come a day when you're like, oh my gosh, yeah, I am worthy. And it may be for you 3 months, it may be 3 weeks. But the fact is, you're telling yourself a new narrative. You're taking control. You're not just reacting to the thoughts floating around and entertaining them. Yeah, I remember one mentor said to me, you know, everybody gets negative thoughts. Just don't roll out the red carpet for the negative ones. Entertain them. I was like, yeah, I won't be doing that anymore.
Tell us, Maxine, what is actually your grand vision?
My brand vision? Oh, my goodness. So my brand vision right now is to help people, women especially, create the impossible. Right now, a lot of women especially are in a lot of pain due to everything that's going on right now. Women are struggling. And my big vision is to help women almost benefit from the pain they're in. Like, it sounds a bit crazy when I first say this, but I really, really believe that you can. I really believe that rather than setback after setback after setback, the women experience be something that stops them, my vision is to help that catapult them into unbelievable greatness. I've seen it happen. I coach it happen every day. And I want to see this. At least 10,000 women in the next 10 years experience that through my work and more outside of my work.
Okay.
Give us an example where you saw it.
Yeah, so we've had, sadly, George Floyd was murdered in the US in May this year. And everything kicked off around the world, you know, riots in the streets and, you know, systemic racism, we must get rid of it. And there was outcry, well, still is, you know, about racism. So one particular client came to me, she was totally furious and in so much pain about how Black children in the UK are being treated, like some of the things that they go through. She was in so much pain, she didn't know what to do with it. So basically, I have this model I kind of take women through about activating what I call your USP, which is to activate your unlimited power, your spirit power, your personal power, to transform pain into power and into purpose that does great things. So we began to take her through this USP system. And this woman went from this rage and anger at the system to basically putting together a proposal to her school governors and having this proposal accepted. They accepted all her recommendations of how the school curriculum should be changed. She has now been hired onto the curriculum committee and is literally radicalizing the entire school. She's now doing work where the local MP in her borough recognizes her and wants to partner with her to create something that is going to change potentially the whole UK school system.
Wow.
That was from being angry about how her two young children were being treated. And but when I found out how she had changed that pain to power, into purpose, that she is like, she can't stop. And I think of the impact, it brings me to tears. And it doesn't have to be about racism. Not everybody has that story. But whatever your story is, whatever the pain is, you don't have pain for pain's sake. Once you decide, I'm going to transform this pain into power, you can unlock purpose that would never have been there had you not had the pain. If there was no racism and if there was no issue in the school system, she would not be about to potentially change a nation. And I want to see that for as many women as possible in their sphere of influence.
Wow. Wow. And the story is inspiring. And yeah. And that's why I ask, because those stories, they stick with people. And it's kind of about not being stuck in the pain. Did I hear that right? It's about saying, okay, I am feeling the pain. That's now the energy. That's the petrol. Now, yes. How can I drive the car and where? And the where is then the purpose.
Exactly. And I think a lot of people get stuck in the pain because sadly, you know, yes, it's warranted in so many cases, like in extreme cases like that. But I think a lot of the time, the unforgiveness that comes with that keeps you in a prison. Mm-hmm. So I remember this lady in particular and so many others being so angry and like, so what? And yes, okay, fine. What's happened warrants that. But you being unforgiven, another mentor said to me, it's like drinking poison and hoping that the other person dies. Like, they've moved on. Like, you're the one who's stuck here. Mm-hmm. So I really believe that, you know, finding the strength to forgive, which is about you, not the other person, and then transforming that pain into power can do mind-blowing things for you. But again, like, you've got to decide. You've got to make a decision that, you know what? Yes, they deserve me to be angry. Yes, you know, it was wrong, but it's not about them. This is potentially about a nation, or this is potentially about your family. It doesn't have to be that grand thing. Whatever it is for you, it's that big. You know,
and as soon as you basically feel that pain, maybe that's also the sign that there could be a purpose behind it, that there could be something in your life where you're drawn to noticing that, and then to see, okay, and maybe the listener doesn't know straight away what to do with that pain or how to transform that into something else. Yes. And then I heard you say, well, get help.
Yeah.
Maybe it doesn't have to be a therapist. It doesn't have to be a coach. It could be a girlfriend.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, but a girlfriend that is kind of like proactive, a girlfriend where, you know, she sees a problem and then she's gone. She's just tackling it head on. She doesn't sit in there. Find yourself a girlfriend like that and say, look, this really drives me up the wall. What can I do? Brainstorm.
That is absolutely it. That is so key. I love what you said. I love that linkage you made back to the pain. Anybody who's wondering about their vision, what are you in pain about? Because it may be linked to that. But yeah, I think you're so right. It doesn't have to, there's no one size fits solution. That is what I found after working with literally hundreds of people now. There isn't. And for you, it may not be a coach. Maybe you don't need that, or therapist. It could be that girlfriend. And it takes maybe sitting down with yourself, like I said before, like, you know, just journaling and just saying, you know what? What is it that I need that's going to help me reach that vision of being out of this pain? That might be the initial vision. Just get me out of this pain. Yeah.
And basically, and there you have it again. When you start imagining things you could do, keep in mind what Maxine said earlier. It needs to be so big then it feels ridiculous.
Yes.
Otherwise, it's not worth it. It needs to feel absolutely grand.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I remember, do I have time for one more example?
Of course.
And this one lady, she came, you know, she was talking about, oh, I want to be, I want to be like on the leadership team, basically reporting to CEO, running a geography. And I basically told her, and she was nowhere near this initially, I said, okay, you start kind of affirming that you are that. And it felt so ridiculous, like so, so ridiculous. But she literally did this for months. And she did the work that came with kind of following the coaching. And literally just a month ago, I found out she's now leader of one of the largest P&Ls in the company. Yeah. And this was about 6 months of doing this and doing the work and following the coaching. So at first it was like, what are you talking about? I feel so stupid. Mm-hmm. And 6 months, she is living it. Because you're kind of tapping into the possibilities that we talked about before. You've kind of stopped the peanut focus, peanut thinking of like, everything I see around me is all that's possible. And with your words, you're tapping into, hey, what else is possible? And every day you're consistent doing it. And every day you're pulling in different people. Hey, this girlfriend that is going to support me. Hey, I'm going to get rid of this person that's putting me down. And you surround yourself with people that tell you that the little thing that seems a little bit crazy is not so crazy. And before you know it, with that consistency of these little, little habits, one day you look up and you're like, oh my goodness, I'm back. Mm-hmm. And then you find the next thing. But celebrate it first, and then you find the next thing, you know, if you should wish, you know.
We have had so many tips and practical ideas on what to do in order to tap into the vision, overcoming the pain. It's just like, out of all the hundreds and thousands of people that you coached, your own life experience, simmer it down. What are your top tips to get out of the reactive mode into a proactive mode? Hey, I'm actually in the driver's seat here. This is my life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm going to summarize it. So basically, you know, when you're in that place where, like, wherever you are, you've got to decide, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. And by decide, it's not like, oh, I'm going to do this, then maybe I'm going to go back. It's like, no other option but to do this. And then you begin to explore those possibilities, what I call the unlimited possibilities, unlimited power. What is it? Sit with yourself if you have to get this vision going. And I would say, you know, I'd like to kind of tell people, connect with your spirit power. And I kind of summarize this by saying your intuition. We all have this ability to be taught from within. We all have this ability to have this divine knowing that I'm on the right path, right? So I would say learn to kind of connect with that. And then activate what I like to call your personal power, which is, no matter what it feels like, even if you feel you're not good enough, we are all brilliant. We're all best in the world at something. So discover what that is and begin to do it. Activate your personal power. We all have cognitive strengths. We have what is called cognitive strengths, right? How we instinctively take action. Understand that, leverage it. Because that's how you begin to kind of make these quantum leaps. And you'll begin to do things. You're like, I see so many women say, oh, you know, doesn't everybody find this easy? No, they don't. This is your superpower. I find it and get doing it, right? I would say your USP. Tap into that unlimited power. Start activating your spirit power. Leverage your personal power and do it consistently, surrounded by people who are saying, yes, go for it. And that could be a coach. That could be your parents. That could be a friend. That could be all the above. Surround yourself with people that can help you as well. Like, you know, in many cases, I say people get a mentor, get a sponsor, get whoever. You know, once you're clear on that vision, then you know what team you need to hire to get you there, or fire to stop being the ball and chain on your legs, stopping you from getting there. I say doing all of these things, and doesn't have to be all at once. Maybe just start doing one, pick whatever one, and start doing it. And while you're doing all of this, you have your vision, you're taking all these steps, be connected, fiercely connected to your why. Mm-hmm. That will keep you motivated when, not if, when the going gets tough.
That's a really good summary of all the different things. And like Maxine said, you know, you don't have to do them all at once, but you have to do them. Without doing the work and just hoping things will change. Maybe things will change on the outside, but my experience is the inside hasn't changed. You perceive the outside just the same.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
you can't become something you're not. You can't. And, you know, even just interesting what you said about, you know, even if the outside changes, you know, that's so true. But also I was just at the WING conference this year again, and we had this incredible, you know, speaker talking about the future. And, you know, they're really good at kind of predicting what's happening next. And they called the 2020s the decade of disruption. So if you think we've been through it in 2020, they're predicting it's only going to get worse. So this may well continue to kind of rock the world, you know, in so many different ways. So the sooner you can kind of get, you know, centered and not be kind of blown through this decade of disruption and distress, I think the better, really. Mm-hmm. Because you are powerful enough to create whatever it is you want once it is that true vision for you.
I have, at the end of my podcast, always the same question. And since you said you listened to a couple of them, you know what the question is. The question is, was there a question that you would have wanted me to ask and I didn't? Or is there something where you say, I would really like to stress that, I would like to leave the listeners with that? Now is the moment.
Yeah, no, I knew that was coming. So I don't think you've asked me a question. I so love this conversation, by the way, Anya. Thank you. I don't think you kind of left any stone unturned. So I think you asked me all the questions. But I'd like to leave the listeners with a story, if that's okay. Mm-hmm. So basically, I mentioned I had two kids. I had my son in July 2019, and it was just such a, you know, everybody has this vision of the birth that they want to have of their kids, and like, you know, you have the birth plans and everything, and mine was the complete opposite of everything I could have hoped for. It was just so traumatic. The first year of his life was literally spent with me looking at him across the room while medical professionals were running around trying to save my life, because even though he had been delivered properly, the placenta hadn't, and they'd made a big mistake. So they saved my life and, you know, had the emergency delivery of the placenta. We were there for a few days and then they sent me home. And I remember just being traumatized by the whole experience, because that is not what I wanted. And bad really went to worse when a little under 2 weeks later, I basically woke up in a pool of my own blood. Mm-hmm. And I had no idea what was going on. The blood was literally spreading from me rapidly. I could feel in my pajamas that there was like blood everywhere. I panicked. So I called my husband over to the side of the bed. This is a big guy who never gets scared. I took one look at his face and I could see he was terrified, which terrified me. We freaked out. So there's this number here that you call in the UK, 111, to get medical advice, and they kind of tell you what to do. They're like, no, you don't need medical advice right now. You need an ambulance. You are dying. And literally, those words, I felt like somebody kicked me in the stomach, and I could feel myself slipping away. And, you know, they say your life begins to flash before your eyes. That began to happen to me. And I've lived in so many different countries. I saw friends in Hungary, like their faces, friends from New York where I'd lived, and like, people coming in and out, just fading from my, you know, in my mind. I thought, oh my God, I'm dying. Somehow my husband managed to carry me to the bathroom to wait for the ambulance. And I could feel myself slipping away. But this was it. The ambulance came. I could barely make any sense at this point. Now, I was sure I was dying, but I couldn't shake the sense. Like, it was almost like what I'd call like a heavenly presence saying to me, look up, just look up. And I just didn't have the strength to do it. But it was just a nagging feeling. So I looked up finally into the next room, saw my son asleep in his bed. I had chosen to, you know, nurse him. That was my decision. And I just suddenly thought, well, if I die, like, there's no one to feed him. By the time my husband deals with a dead wife, goes to buy bottles and formula and teaches this child to drink, this could be the whole day. He'll starve. My daughter had also come down to our room, and she'd come like to medical appointments, had seen them prick my fingers to take blood and was totally freaked out. I thought, if she wakes up to this chaos, like, this is it, she's scarred for life. And just seeing like, oh my goodness, I can't die. My children need me. It gave me strength from I don't know where to just basically wake up, start answering the questions and like, you know, working with the ambulance team. It gave me strength to feed my son potentially for the last time and tell my husband, hey, he's on a 3-hour schedule, wherever they're taking me, bring this kid in 3 hours time to eat. To get down into the ambulance, go through emergency surgery. And literally, thank God, everything was fine. They just left some placenta, which was basically causing me to hemorrhage to death. Mm-hmm. I've lost over 3 liters of blood. The body only has 5 or 6. I lost over half my body of blood. My husband came with the baby and literally handed me the baby. I looked up at the clock. It was exactly 3 hours since the last feed, exactly when I wanted to be feeding him again. And I was just so grateful. I was like, wow, that's all I wanted, you know, for my kids not to suffer, to be here for them. And I say all of that, not because I love telling that story. I just shiver a little bit when I think about it. But I just want to share that because no matter what the situation, it could be as intense as I am dying. I am literally dying. There's nothing like purpose to give you that fight. For me, looking up and seeing, God, they need me. The next generation need me, was enough for me to kind of get up and fight. It just wasn't my time and I could fight. I had a choice, but it gave me the strength to fight. Purpose will do that. So I want to encourage you, whatever it is for you, whether it's the next generation or whether it's something else, find it, cling to it, and let it help you push through even death. Because whatever it is for you, your next generation need you to get up and fight. Your next generation need you to take action, no matter what it feels like or how much it hurts. Your next generation need you. So I want to end with that. Yeah.
And that story deserves a silence. I thank you. I can feel my heartbeat. I thank you for coming onto the podcast. I thank you for your presence, for your stories. And I leave you with my wishes for you and for your family, feeling well and get your vision real, inspiring thousands of women to live out their dream.
Yeah, it's possible. It's available, even no matter what it looks like.
Thank you.
You're so welcome, and thank you.
You heard a production by Anja Förster. Copyright Anja Förster. Music by audionautics.com.